This is TJ Jaganowski, and this is Improv Nerd.
That's improv, bitch. Improv, bitch.
I mean, after all, you're nerds.
Improv.
Nerds.
Improv.
Nerds.
Improv.
Nerds.
Welcome, I'm Jimmy Carain, and this is Improv Nerd, the podcast where we get up close and personal with some of improv's biggest icons. Tonight is our last show here at Stage 773 in Chicago, and before we move on, I just want to thank everybody for making this happen. And I love these guys, and we are moving to Second City, or as they say in the theater business, we are transferring our show. And what a great guest to have on our final night, and that is TJ Jaganowski. Of course, TJ is half of TJ and Dave, one of the longest running and critically acclaimed improv shows here in Chicago, in New York. We sat down with TJ with one of our deepest and most personal interviews yet. We talked about his brother committing suicide, the vending machine falling on his foot that he very rarely talks about, and a breakup that he still isn't over.
Thank you for doing this. We always have a good time. And we did Carl and the Passions for a couple of years.
Yes, we did.
And I always had as much fun with you, performing with you, but more fun when we had the note sessions. Uh-huh. Remember that?
I do.
And I'm not going to give the guy's name, but we had one coach that the note session actually was twice the length of the show.
Yeah. And the promise was always like, this will be real quick.
Right. Yeah, yeah. And you were always like, the thing I was amazed was like, it was you and Noah on that team. And you guys, and I guess to me, the three of us had like 100 years of improv together. And you were always very respectful, no matter who we had as a coach. Yeah. How did you learn? You're very a very respectful person. Was that something you were raised with or developed or...
Well, it was our coach.
Okay.
You know, and whether our coach was, you know, like it, good, bad, otherwise, they're telling us something we should listen to.
Right.
You know, and I played a lot of sports, and I always held the name coach, I guess, in a lot of respect. That to the point even where I'd call other people like who were just like, I found wise in my world, I just started calling them coach. You know, like, cause it's like, oh yeah, you're keeping me on track. And I would also say and this team that Jimmy and I were on, the initial idea was that it combined older folk with people who were just out of classes.
Uh-huh.
And they would combine those two groups for the team. And I thought if it would be also a good example for younger people that if they saw us like rolling our eyes or
right.
whatever, then it's an excuse not to listen to the people we should be listening to. And so in case their eyes left this unnamed person and saw one of us, I wanted us to be watching that person so that they would come back to that person. Because we were all supposed to be doing what that person was saying.
What did you, like, we would have these note sessions, and I'm not exaggerating. They did go along. What did you learn from that?
Well, in the same way that coaching is like taking classes and stuff, that I've always sort of pictured it like a salad bar where, you know, like you don't want, you can't make your bed out of like baby corn.
Uh-huh. I hate baby corn. It's not real corn.
It's gotta be real corn.
Right.
It's just undersized,
yeah.
You know, like, so you find the person you make the bed out of, and then anyone has something to offer, and so you get two baby corn, you know, or
right.
you grab a baby corn, you know, or a couple of artichoke hearts.
Mm-hmm.
But that if you listen to anyone, they're gonna teach you something. There's gonna be something to add to the salad. So I can't at this point put a point on anything that particular person said,
okay.
But I know that something still lives in me that happened during that.
Now, growing up in Holyoke, Massachusetts, were you a funny kid?
No.
Did your family think you were funny?
No.
No? What did they think of you?
I was very studious.
Okay.
And a bit neurotic about it.
I can't see the neurotic part at all.
Really? Yeah. Really?
No, I'm serious.
Okay. Yeah, no, I was very neurotic about it. My mother, I would say, still considers me probably the unfunniest person that
in the family?
No, that she's met.
Oh, okay. And they didn't know what you did for the longest time, right? You had to keep explaining to them what you did?
Well, it takes a while to explain to anybody what improv is until they see it, and then they're like, oh, my God, why didn't you just say that? Like, okay, well, describe it to me, what you just saw. Like, I don't know how to say it, you know? But everyone goes through that. Like, so it's stand-up, so it's whose lines? I'm like, no, it's like a play. Kind of, but, you know, like, until you see it, you don't know how to explain it. And then they got tired of trying to explain it to other people as well. So they just started bringing busloads of people to shows. Great. Now here's at least 40 people we don't have to explain it to anymore.
And your dad was a plumber. And actually, I want to thank him. He gave me a great tip
when I was
about the faucet, which
yep.
I didn't know. I was having water pressure problems. Yep. This is great for the podcast. Mm-hmm.
And it was at Noah and Linda's faux wedding celebration.
Yes, it was. Yeah. Which Noah, Gregor Robinson, and Linda had the wedding celebration at 10:30 on a Friday night at the Improv Olympic.
Yep.
There was no shows that night. It was just a wedding celebration.
And the tail end of the hurricane was hitting Massachusetts, and my dad got trapped in town.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And he was there, and he gave me a great tip, and it worked. It
yep.
added my water pressure. But you worked for your dad for a short period of time as a plumber's assistant or something like that, and he fired you?
Yep.
What happened?
I could not get up on time.
Are you serious? At that point, did you say, I can't get up on time, I'm going to be an improviser?
No. I didn't know what improvisation was. I just knew I had a hard time waking up in the morning, and that would it would probably behoove me to find a job that starts at 10 at night. Even this is kind of early.
Yeah, Jimmy. I know.
7:30, yeah, Christ.
Yeah. And then you skipped the fourth grade.
Mm-hmm.
Was that because you were so studious?
I was so smart, Jimmy.
Is this uncomfortable talking about you?
Yeah,
is it? Okay,
yeah.
What do you feel uncomfortable about? Because knowing you, there's a sense of being you're guarded a lot of times. Is that true?
I don't know. I find myself pretty open. I don't know. It's like hearing your voice on the answering machine, or you know, like, or seeing a picture of yourself. It's not the most comfortable experience, uh-huh. But I can handle it, James.
Okay, no, I know you can.
I moved from a public school to a Catholic school as I was moving from third to fourth grade, because everything in my neighborhood at that time we could walk to.
Mm-hmm.
So we walked to the baseball field, we walked to church, we walked to school, and they were going to start busing kids cross town, and it just seemed like more worry when the Joseph Metcalf School was right here and Blessed Sacrament was right here, literally shared a fence. And so my mom was like, well, I'll just put you in that other school, and then that way you can still walk to and from. And I had two younger brothers, and we would walk to school together or whatever. So I think somehow in the changeover, when I went from the public to parochial school, I tested out of fourth grade or whatever, so I went from third to fifth, which created an awful uniform experience. Because now I had to wear ties, but my mom had already done school shopping, so they were all like golf shirts and stuff like that. So I had to wear clip-on ties on golf shirts. And then in the wintertime, I was still wearing clip-ons, but they would fall off because I was trying to get them around buttons and stuff.
Yeah.
So I'd end up in like Mr. Miller's social studies, and like, where's your tie? Like, oh, this is gonna be awful. And it was just like stomped on because it fell off in the hallway, and everyone was like playing in the snow, so down the end of the hallway. it was, and they were all knit ties back then. And
uh-huh.
Like that was hot. So it was like this textured maroon knit tie with boot prints and mud and salt and stuff on it that I'd have to like throw back on my neck so I could learn about the colonies.
And then your brother dies when you're 21.
21.
Mm-hmm. How has that death impacted you?
I miss him.
What was your relationship like with him?
We were pretty close, but Todd was a moody kid, I guess. Like, that was the name for it back then. Like, your grandfather's moody. It was probably bipolar, but it didn't seem like that word was around, or maybe I was unacquainted with it. But so he was moody. So there were days you just kind of stayed out of Toddy's way.
And younger or older?
Younger.
Okay.
I was the first. I was the firstborn. Todd was 18 when he committed suicide. Mm-hmm. So our relationship was as good as it could have been. We always got along, but there were days when you just stayed out of Todd's way.
And how did that affect your parents?
I guess in the way you would imagine. I hear there's nothing more unnatural than outliving a child, outliving your child. So, but I also hear that often leads to marriages falling apart, and my folks are still as close as they've ever been, and have dealt with it in very different ways, I would say, but just celebrated their 41st anniversary last week, and they're still best friends. It's a sickening bar to try and live up to. Like, if I got married now, I'd have to live to like 82 to get anywhere, just to get where they are now, and they're nowhere near done.
Yeah,
you know?
I can relate.
Yeah.
My parents had their 50th wedding anniversary, and if Lauren and I got married today, I would be 97, and I don't want to live that. I don't want to live that long. I don't know about you, you know.
I want to live that long. Well, it just doesn't. You don't imagine you're real well at that point. Pasquazi's dad had something wrong with his prostate, and his doctor was like, "Yeah, you live to the point. Like, if you're 80, your prostate's gonna blow. We're out living our
it's
parts.
It's like a gasket.
Now.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, we're out living our parts.
Right.
You know, like, if you stay alive long enough, everything's gonna get awful. You know, like.
Now, when I did research on you, I was just the amount of pain that you've had in your life. Your brother.
Jesus, yes. Jimmy. You said we were going to talk about Holyoke and then talk about TJ and Dave. There's a
We don't have to go there.
No, I'm fine.
Are you really?
I'm well acquainted with the night, James.
Okay. There's only a few people I could go this far with. I just want to let you know. And we already had Noah on the show. Yeah.
Right.
Okay. In college, a vending machine falls on your leg. You have an operation. You almost lose your leg.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Truth be told, I pulled the vending machine over on my leg.
Is that true? That's not how it's been reported. What happened?
I wanted Munchos very badly.
Now, were you drinking?
I was.
Okay.
And that's probably why I wanted Munchos as badly as I wanted them. And it was honestly one of those, like, you gotta be fucking kidding me, right there. So I was like, well, maybe I just rattle this machine, you know. Like, I tried to push it from the front. It's like, I'm not getting enough leverage. So I move around the back of it, and I'm pushing on it, and it was like, uh-oh, there it goes. So I got around, I moved around to the side real quick. I was like, I'll just catch it.
Right. Because I'm thinking, as you tell this story, I'm like, a vending machine's not that heavy.
That's what you would think.
Yes.
It's probably 1,600 pounds. So I moved around to the side, and this leg came out a little far, and it came down mid-shin, and it was like, well, maybe it's a sprain, honestly. I'm wearing soccer shoes, so I try and get my leg out, and my knee's doing this, but my foot's not moving. So I untie my shoe and pull my leg out, and I'm still thinking, like, maybe it's a sprain. And I put my foot down, and it's just like... And it sounds like six pool balls in a sock.
Right.
It's just like click, 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 click. So I started hopping down the hall. Because my buddy, at this time, my buddy's doing a radio show in a soundproof booth.
So now, are you thinking, like, what story am I going to tell him, or are you just going to get help?
At this point, I'm like, this is worse than I thought it was.
Okay.
So I'm like, hopping down the hall, and the foot's just kind of like, you can feel it just kind of like dangling. And two people walk into the building, and we're like, hey, can you tell us how to get to, like, honestly,
like,
Jimmy?
Like,
I answered. It's like, yeah, there's a security guy. You came in the radio entrance. The dormitory is way around the other side. So you got to, like, go around there, and the guy's going to ask you for your ID and show him your ID and then check in with him. Thanks, man. No problem.
And by the way, the vending machine's not working on three.
And so I got into the radio booth, and I told my friend Jason, like, I need you to do two favors for me. Like, call an ambulance. I think I broke my leg, and tell them to hurry, because I think I'm going to pass out.
But it's like a major surgery, and they say, the doctor says, like, if you would have waited, then it gets infected, there's gangrene, and you almost lost.
Yeah, it was a staph heading towards, had a staph infection heading towards gangrene. I guess my body rejected the screws. There were plates and screws and stuff in there, and it wasn't cool with the screws for some reason.
And then, this is just, I haven't even got, I mean, we're just going through. I mean,
I'm sorry.
No, you're doing great. Then,
what else has happened to me, Jimmy?
Well, there was a girl that you were going to marry. You asked her to marry her a couple times, and
yep.
She said no. And you, and
first time she didn't answer. Second time she said yes. A day later, she said she wished she had.
We're not going to reveal the name. Do I know her? I mean, is it a mutual?
You know.
Okay. And you loved her.
Absolutely.
How did you get over that?
I don't know if I am.
Okay. And then you get vertigo.
Yep.
You're doing Second City main stage. This is like a huge. You know what? I got to tell you something. You have such good nature about this stuff.
What else can happen to me?
Right.
I'm like Garp when he's going to buy the house.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're on main stage.
Mm-hmm.
Things are going great. It's a great review and stuff. It's a couple months, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens? You're on stage?
Yep. And then something very odd visually happens. I was delivering a monologue, a very short monologue, stage right, and I'm looking out, and like this, you know, you can't see the back of the house, and it's tough to describe, but everything I'm seeing just drops through the floor and comes back through the ceiling. It pulls back to a point,
mm-hmm.
and then shoots. It was like a... It looked like something a bad cable, you know, channel would do of, like, between videos. Like, wow! And so it pulled back to a point and then snapped back. And I was confused, and I couldn't remember if I had finished my little monologue or what scene we were in. So when the lights went out, I went back to the wing, and at Second City they post even deep into the run. They always have the running orders, you know. So I look at the running order, hoping that it would jog something, and I couldn't recognize a scene. I didn't know if I was in the next one. If someone said you're in, like, now you're in Long Day's Journey in tonight. Like, okay, well, I don't know that either, you know. So I'm just going to stand here for a little bit and see what happens. I fumbled through the rest of. That was in the first act with only, like, I think, three scenes to go. And I didn't do the second act. They did the second act with the five, and I went to Grant. I don't even think Grant Hospital is there anymore, but I went to Grant, and they said I had vertigo.
But do you still have effects from it?
I still don't feel like I used to before that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And over time, that experience has tangled itself with an anxiety that still keeps me from doing anything scripted. I used to get regular afraid, you know, like anyone gets afraid. But then you start doing it and the fear goes away and then you're fine. But now it's become twined with a thing that I just I don't do anything.
Does it ever does it ever show up when you're doing TJ or Dave or Carl and the Passions or any of the other shows? Struggling
a little bit beforehand, but not during. For some reason, I thank God because I was not intent on ever doing like movies or television. Second City was an end in itself. Mm-hmm. It wasn't going to be like a springboard to go do other stuff. I just wanted to do that. I thought I was going to be one of those guys who like. They do 5 reviews, and then you have to be asked to leave, you know?
Right.
And even after that, I just wanted to play on a stage in front of people. So when that, and I don't want to say, like, it was taken away. That sounds too, like, it feels like it's out of my control right now, so I guess that's the best phrase for it, that it was taken away. But for whatever reason, the thing that I really loved doing more than anything was improvising, and thankfully that's been spared. For some reason, it seems that the focus that it takes to improvise doesn't allow that worry. Mm-hmm. And also with a script, it's of all the words that were ever made, ever spoken in any language or whatever, this word is correct right now. And as soon as you get through that one, there's only one word that's correct after that, and now there's only one that's correct after that. So they're not sentences anymore. They're like odd challenges at every step of the way. But with improvising, and hopefully this is true when we do this, Jimmy, that every word that's ever been spoken in any language is still okay, because I know you're going to make it right, or we'll find a way to be okay with it. And so I still get to improvise.
And speaking of improvising, let's improvise. And, you know, we talked before what we wanted to do, and this is what I would like to do.
Okay.
I would like to do what you do for TJ and Dave.
Okay.
So what would that look like if we did that?
It usually looks like looking at everybody in the eye, at least from what I do.
Okay. Now why would we do that?
That used to be to find the girl that would stay unmentioned, to see where she was in the house.
Is she here tonight?
I doubt it.
Okay.
I think she's probably working right now. But
is she, we're not going to get her name. Is she still in Chicago?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep. So it was to find her, because I started seeing her right around the same point that Dave and I started playing together.
10 years ago.
Mm-hmm. And so it was to see her. It was to see her face, and that would make me less nervous, because Dave can be, especially not knowing him, you can be real nervous around.
I was very nervous last week.
Yeah.
With him. I was intimidated and scared. So you feel that too sometimes?
There's a part of me that feels more comfortable around him than just about anybody I know, and there's still a part of me that is I never want to disappoint him, and so. That still holds.
What is it in Dave? Because we had Noah on the first week, and Noah said the guy that I want the most approval from is still Dave. What is it about Dave that? And I feel the same way. You know,
he's awesome. Mm-hmm. You know, like I think in a you know, the psychological sense. If you get to paint with Rembrandt, you want Rembrandt to say you did real good,
right?
You know. In a very practical sense, I think speaking to Dave, he gives you no indication how he feels about what you're saying as you're saying it to him. Where most of us are like, "All right," you know, or nod or like smile. He just does this. And it's only because he's listening that intently. He doesn't want to miss anything. But watch like a 24-year-old say, "That was a really great show. I just want to say it was a really great show." All Dave's doing is this. And that person will be like, "Or it wasn't." "Or maybe it was not. Like, you probably don't. I shouldn't have even said anything. I'm sorry." All he was doing was, he was just listening, but he just doesn't kind of have those, like, you know, little check-ins with you to like, "Yeah, go ahead, keep going," you know, like you're nodding, you know. And so the speaker feels like, "Okay, I'm on the right path," you know. He just you know, like.
But it's funny because I don't think he's not looking for approval from other people, and
I think so.
I mean, that's what I admire so much.
It's rare to meet someone that isn't afraid of anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so far, from what I've seen, he doesn't fear a single thing. That when we fly, I'm not terrified anymore, but I do not like flying. And honestly, you said one time, if this plane started going down, or we were talking about the plane going down, he would just kind of sit there.
Right.
And experience the feeling of a plane going down to the point where you die.
Right.
You know, like, that's unnerving in itself. It's like, I want someone to freak out with me, you know? Like, cause I'm gonna, if you go into a dead spin at 36,000 right. feet, and you're like, okay, what do we got? A minute and a half until this right. thing hits? And I'm like, out of my mind, I look over, and he's just like... but yeah, I have not found the thing that he's
you know, I asked him, I said, how many bad shows did you have with TJ and Dave? I'm not gonna tell you what he answered. How many would you say you had?
Bad?
Bad.
One.
Whoa. He said the same thing.
First one. And then we've been I would certainly not say they've all been great. I would not even say they've all been good, but we've only had one bad one.
Okay, and that was the first one.
The first one.
And what made it bad? Just
we didn't do what we said we were going to do.
Okay. All right. So getting back to what we're going to do.
Yes.
We look at the audience. She's not out there tonight.
Nope.
Okay.
But over time, seeing everyone's eyes has created this thing of like, well, you can see us, but we can see you, and it puts me at ease to know that like we're all in this. Together, so that like wow.
Okay, because making eye contact with the audience, even in the monologue, scares the hell out of me.
Really,
it does. Okay, so we do that, and then what? The lights come down.
Not at that point. Music's still playing at that point.
Okay,
and then we say we're looking forward to improvising for you, and trust us, this is all made up.
And then the first, when we both come out there, we're in silence, mm-hmm. and.
We look at each other mm-hmm. and see if we can determine what's already going on.
Okay.
And then we just try and be as close to feeling the same way about that as we can.
Okay, let's try it.
Okay.
Okay, Emily, did you get that, what we're going
to
do?
Do you want me to do music?
Yeah, let's do the whole experience.
Okay.
I'm dying tonight. Tonight's my last show. What do you do before with Dave? What do you do, and Dave? What do you guys warm up? Do you say anything to each other?
No, we talk about our day, and then we go off separately to do whatever it is that kind of makes us feel most without fear.
Okay.
And then we hug, usually stage left.
Okay.
And then we walk out.
So we're gonna hug before we do this. Okay. All right.
Good birthday?
Yeah. It's going good.
Yeah?
Yeah. There's still cake there.
Yeah. No, I ate. I'm sorry.
You said you're going to be here at 9.
Yeah, I tried to. I tried to, and then I got waylaid. Yeah.
Karen was here.
Oh.
Yeah. She asked about you.
Really?
Yeah.
Like in
yeah, in that kind of way.
A future, a possible
yeah,
future
one. Yeah.
Okay.
She's like, no, no. I said you were gonna be here.
What time did she get here?
She was here at 8:40.
Oh, so she got here early.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, probably claim out the territory, get comfortable.
Yeah, she was like on the couch and she was like, you know, Bill was here. You know, Bill, and Bill was like all over her and stuff.
Why?
Because that's Bill's nature. Like, when he knows somebody's not here, like, he goes for her.
You bought a ton of soda.
Yeah. Yeah. I got my dad's Costco card. Yeah.
Hey, how many people came?
Well, I mean, at one time. Because they kind
total. Of, just give me the
total.
Cumulative.
Bill and they're about six.
Okay.
Yeah.
You had enough soda for 20.
Yeah. I really appreciate you coming.
Yeah, you know, I apologize. It took me so long. I got my uncle's in town, and so I
really
had to, like, entertain him for a little bit. Yeah, he's a DJ. He was.
Yeah, I know. I know.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
All
remember
right.
You met Frank?
Yeah.
You met Dr.
Cool.
Funk?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He made a remember our graduation. He made that mixtape.
Yeah.
That was so boss, man. Mm-hmm. That was so boss. I had that until the last couple years, and then I spelled jelly on it, and it was like forget.
You're the only one who says boss. So.
Yeah.
I love that.
Thanks, man.
I think the 40s are going to be awesome.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to the 40s.
Yeah.
I am, man.
You're due for a good decade.
Yeah, yeah, the last decade.
Yeah. 30s were rough.
Yeah.
Still got the bird cage.
Yeah.
You should get another bird.
I don't know. I don't know. I'm still... I feel guilty getting another bird.
Come on. Peaches would want you to have another bird. Don't you think?
I don't know.
Come on, if a bird could want something past seed, it would want you to have another bird.
That's why I did like a cutout bird. That's the closest I can get to having a bird.
Yeah.
I put coming soon on it.
I can read now.
You know, Peaches loved you more than he loved me.
Come on.
Yes.
That, okay.
Every time you came over and he the door was open, he'd fly over the room and land right on your shoulder. Man, you were like Dr. Doolittle.
I can't. All right. That certain things really like me. Black ladies.
Black ladies love you.
Lesbians.
Lesbians love you.
Animals.
Yep.
I got a thing. That's my, you know, like, if I, you know, when you play Mortal Kombat and, like, speed, strength, or whatever, and everything is on a different gauge?
Yeah.
Black ladies, lesbians, and animals.
Yep.
That's my strength.
Yep.
I'm, like, 98% on that.
You said some really nice things at the funeral. Peaches.
Oh, yeah.
That was really nice. You were the only one who came.
A lot of that might have been quotes that I left uncredited.
to be or not to be?
That one I thought everyone would know.
I knew, but I didn't want to say anything.
I think a couple of things were from All Things Great and Small.
That one sounded like an R.E.M. lyric.
It might have been.
Okay.
Yeah, Night Swimming deserves a quiet night.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely R.E.M.
Do you think
Peaches died of natural causes or was a suicide?
Oh my God.
I'm just asking.
I would say, and if only because it's a bird, that it was natural causes, but I could see, and forgive me for this.
It's okay.
The mood of the home could have led him to a place where he might be less happy, and then perhaps natural causes creep in.
I totally understand, but
I don't want to sell birds short because I hear parrots are very smart, but I just don't give enough credit for suicide, and hell, it's probably a valiant act if you're that unhappy. Then it's probably a valiant act. But I don't even think the fall from the perch to the bottom of the cage would do enough to kill a
something that can fly.
Because I've just been living with that guilt for a long time.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. No, release yourself.
Okay.
Release yourself. There's no possible autopsies for birds.
No.
Okay.
Well, what do you...
I don't know. If you really want to get to the core of it, can you exhume the body? How long does a cigar box last? Will it protect?
Well, I wrapped it in plastic, so I'd say I've been gone for 3 months now.
Probably, like, maybe hair. You know, like hair and fingernails keep on growing. Maybe, like, beaks and feathers keep growing after. Let's party. Let's party.
See, that's what happens. Without you in my life, when I have a chance to party, it just goes back to depressing.
Yeah. Oh, I got a record on order for you.
Oh, really?
I don't have it today. They said it was going to be here today.
Really? Vinyl?
Yeah, it's vinyl.
Oh, man.
It's vinyl. Yeah, you bought the thing. We should start putting stuff on it.
Yeah, the turntable.
The only guy
man.
I know has a turntable, no albums.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
well, I was waiting for my friends to bring them, but you're the only one who came through.
Ella and Louie. Ella Fitzgerald and
Louie. And Louie Armstrong. Satchmo.
Yep.
I like that.
Yep. What did you say, Satchmo?
Satchmo, that's what they called Louis Armstrong.
Oh, yeah, I thought you said Satchmo.
No, I did, I said Satchmo. But it's Satchmo.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love. See, I thought I would make you laugh. See, I can have a good time.
I know you can. I know you can.
There's more pop in here if you want it.
Oh, yeah, I'm not, yeah.
You can take some home if you want.
I might do that, but yeah, I'm not, I don't think I'll... I don't think we're going to put a serious dent in that thing tonight. You, yeah, we... you know what I should have gotten you was, like, another chair. You know?
Yeah.
Like, maybe an ottoman. You should think about, like, even an ottoman. Because you can sit on that. A guest could sit on that or put their feet up on it.
That'd be cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, an ottoman can be cool. That would be cool.
What do I need to get women in my life?
You gotta get out of the house. you know what? Going to Costco is a pretty decent start.
Yeah.
You know? Like, that's because I was trying to think about this the other day, and not just for you, but women need. Like, women have to go certain places.
Yeah.
You know, they have to go to, like, gas stations.
Uh-huh.
They have to go to a grocery store.
Uh-huh.
They have to go to... That's about it. You know? But they have to, because everyone, just about everybody has to do that. So start hanging out at those places. You're going to look creepy if you're hanging out at a gas station. You know, like, you'll look like you don't know what you're doing or get out of here, you know. But you can grocery shop for a long time. You can really slow play a grocery store. And they got to eat. So go to that, you know. And I think you would be great in a grocery store.
Really?
Yeah. Dude, frankly, all right. As your friend, okay? I think I probably not said a lot of stuff.
Don't put
to you,
the on a gym table.
Okay. But as now in the 40s, I'm going to be honest with you because you can take this.
This is what I like about you. You're always honest with
your befuddled nature in a grocery store is going to be lady bait. And you don't have to work heavy props, but get a cart and put two things in it and then just stand somewhere and look like you don't know what... Like the dryer sheets do. Someone is going to come up to you and help you. And I guarantee you that it's going to be a lady.
It's that easy.
I don't know. I wouldn't do it. But I think that's your milieu. I think your groove zone is grocery store befuddled. And, you know, obviously I'm not one to talk,
Because I can't even...
Oh, that's not true. That is not true. You've gotten more women since we were in high school. It's unbelievable.
Than you?
Yes.
I've gotten more women?
Yes.
That's true.
And the thing is, when you're done with them, you're done with them.
All right.
Remember Kathy?
Yeah.
Keep goes Kathy.
I remember. Yes. We don't have to call her that anymore. If you're bringing up Kathy, I know it's going to be Kinko's Kathy.
Okay.
And not Eyeball Kathy. Oh,
that was Lazy Eye Kathy.
Yeah. Just call him Kathy.
And the thing is, Kinko's Kathy didn't work at Kinko's. You know why we called her Kinko's Kathy?
Yes, I do. Because you thought you heard something one time that you didn't hear.
And I kept repeating it.
Yes. They all don't work until one does work. You know what I mean?
No.
Every relationship, the people who are happiest in the world with their relationships are still... One in something worked, you know? And so we're not one of one has worked, you know? We're going to be one in 20 works, or one in 5 works, or one in 8 works. But they all don't work until the one that does work. So right now we're 0-4 whatever. Sooner or later, we're going to find the one. And then we'll be one out of boom. But that's all you really need is one.
Boom.
Is one. Yeah, one boom.
Boom.
One boom.
See, that's why no one else at the party tonight, except for you, brought hope. Everybody else just ate my food and left.
Is there any grub left?
Well, there's some dip and then a couple of chicken wings, but no shrimp. Why is it when people come over, doesn't matter, they always clean you out on shrimp. First 5 minutes, it's gone.
Because it's still somehow considered like a delicacy or like a special thing, even though it's everywhere now. People still... Plus, it's got to be cold, so people eat it fast.
Yeah. I think just saying the word shrimp, people just want to take it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
If I said it was seafood over there, we'd probably have half of it. Who are you calling? I don't know yet.
No one called me. I was going to look through here, pick a lady name.
Nancy.
Do you know that Nancy? She's a little bit weird.
That's wait, go back. Weird Nancy. Okay. She still lives in Chicago?
I think so. I haven't talked to her in a while, but I can't. It's like a book. I can't give up a phone number. You know? I don't feel good.
Okay. Maggie.
Okay.
Maggie.
Interesting.
Remember we saw her last week at Navy Pier?
Yes.
She was...
We're calling her right now.
Okay.
Hey, Maggie, what's going on? Yeah, been forever. What are you doing tonight? Well, not too much. I'm at a hot party. Oh, you in the mood for as much soda as a lady can handle?
Let me see if I got some frozen pizzas.
What? And pizza. There's pizza. There's dip. There's the memory of shrimp in the room. We got a half a sheet cake.
What? Chocolate on chocolate.
Chocolate on chocolate. How filthy does that sound? That's the height of decadence. Why don't you call a friend and have her come to
146.
146.
Oakley.
Oakley.
Apartment 2.
Apartment 2.
She's got to buzz in before. Okay.
Yes.
Couple folding chairs? Yeah.
Does that work?
No.
Okay, no, don't bring a movie. Cool. See you when that happens.
That was great.
Right?
Yeah.
So now this is happening. Now this is happening.
All right.
Okay. Oh,
this is cool, man. It's really cool.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Thank you. What?
Nothing.
What? Don't do that. Don't do that to me. What?
It's nothing.
No, no, no. Don't fuck with me
now. I just remembered who Maggie actually is. Don't worry about it, though.
Wait.
Don't worry about it.
No. Tell me.
I don't want...
This is my birthday. I don't want surprises. What?
Nothing. Don't worry about it. It's cool. It's absolutely cool.
No, I know. I can see it in your eyes.
It's cool.
No,
You know what? I'm going to get her out of here, and I bet you her friend is awesome. We'll stay here long enough, and then I'll clear her out.
She's got a dark side, man.
If tradition holds, she's going to have a lot of henna tattoos on her back.
Improv. Nerds. Improv. Nerds. Show and get competition.
That was a lot of fun.
Good.
That was really fun.
Good.
Something I noticed at the beginning was we were both playing low-status characters, mm-hmm. and then you made the adjustment to be a little high-status. Was that a conscious choice?
I guess it was. You know what? Like I was thinking a little bit of that as it was going on, is that out of habit and comfort zone, I end up going low, and I think Dave goes high out of comfort as well. And so I don't know if necessarily status has to be claimed, but I was worried that we might both be inactive, that the portrayal of fear is okay as long as we're still improvising real strongly. And so I was worried that it might make us just two sad sack guys. And mood is really contagious. So two people being sad and inactive, I feel like it's almost like a mist that moves over the audience that then everyone starts feeling sad and inactive.
Which is how I feel most of the time.
There you go.
And I was just glad, like, oh my God, I got a character. TJ kind of, I'm just going to mirror what TJ's doing and, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it wasn't like a status pull as much as like, well, I don't want it to be tragic and stagnant.
Mm-hmm. What do you think we took from the discussion before?
Oh, plenty, James.
Okay. Because I've got to, you know, doing this.
You think my bird committed suicide? Well, you know, all the relationships working and not, relationships working and not working. And I know there was something else in there, but I can't place
well,
right
I think
now.
The whole thing about relationships and the whole thing that you talked about, you'd look out to the audience, the whole, you know, asking her to marry you and all that, I think that was in the scene too, don't you?
I think the feel of that was. Yeah. Certainly, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you think people missed, like, okay, when they're given a suggestion or they're taking something that they're, you know, at the beginning of a Harold, that it has to be so logical. Can it be just a feel, a tone?
Probably not from a, well, like with a Harold, you take the suggestion, but then you make it other things.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think if someone said, you know, spatula for the suggestion for that scene, they'd, at some point, I feel like we'd have to hold a spatula, you know. But I don't think they're I end up flipping an omelet, and then we have that scene, like, oh, thank God the spatula was there, you know. Like, I think eventually if something's good, people are going to be fine. You know, are going to be fine with that. So I don't know. I don't know if it's Dave and Maya's experience that a suggestion doesn't necessarily need to be taken. Mm-hmm. But I know other people feel more taken care of by having someplace to start. And mm-hmm. often that's a suggestion. We just start with a different thing.
We're going to take some questions from the audience, either okay. what we just did or a question for you.
Okay.
All right? Yes?
I was actually thinking this question before the scene, but now it's more relevant. I was listening to a podcast where Steve Waltin said nothing should be off limits in a scene, but after his dad died of a heart attack, he couldn't get out of his head every time somebody he was playing would have a heart attack. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if the suicide thing that came up in that scene or in past performances has affected you.
No, it hasn't. And my brother passed a while before I ever started improvising as well. So I had a chance to deal with that for a few years. Maybe it would be different if it was, you know, if it was 3 weeks after it happened. But I had a chance to make like all my peace and stuff with that. So I have yet to come across a thing that I just shy away from in a scene. Except, well, there's certain things, but they're not. It's not personal. It's like blatant cruelty, or you know, or some awful saying something awful, racist or blue or whatever, for no good reason other than you were afraid. But there's no subject matter that I just won't, you know, like haven't been able to mess around with.
Is there a healing part of improv for you? Because you do it so often per week.
I don't know. I guess there is when I need to be healed, mm-hmm. but when I'm just fine, then I don't need to be healed. So,
yes.
When you're doing a long form two person show, there can be a lot of like moments where it can get awkward or there might be dead air or anything. And what always befuddles me is the difference between say discovery and invention.
Uh-huh.
Like what you said in terms of changing mood or at least changing your character's perspective slightly, when you make conscious decisions like that, do you have that sort of agenda? I think I need to tweak something in here just so I can give this thing wheels, or is it more of an organic discovery and you just feel inclined to do that?
I'm not quite sure. I think maybe part of it has become semi-instinctual. And quiet times are not necessarily bad times.
Yeah.
You know, like we run through those silences sometimes when plenty is going on, because we're just thinking and looking at each other or letting things be. So I guess I imagine sometimes I guess if I had to put words to it, it would be that the smallest bit of craft ends up coming into it, but needs to be true to what's already been organically made. And so every once in a while you'll make an adjustment and of maybe adding a little bit of energy to it so that a scene has, you know, a tone, an amplitude to it that hasn't been there before. But ideally it's not just from out of nowhere. Now all of a sudden this guy's really high energy, that you find something in your partner, you find something in the environment that's already been made that makes you excited. So at least you can have an up in there that you can, you know, then adjust. You can go back down if you want to, but at least there's this other note in the tone.
Because there are a lot of really inspired and cool moments in that piece. And what's so thrilling about watching you guys play, because you've both been doing this for so long, is that sometimes I wonder, like, is that just by virtue of them doing it for so long that their instincts are just there to guide them into, this just feels like the pitch perfect thing to do, or is it more just, you know, like what you said, there's a little bit of craft, but it's all taken from them?
Yeah, I mean, like, ideally everything's already kind of been made. As soon as you do one thing, it's almost like, if this is true, then what? If Jimmy is truly this sad, then what else is in this room with him? There ends up being a record player with no records, a birdcage with no birds, like way too much soda because he thought there was going to be 30 people showing up and 5 people came or whatever. That, like, if that's true, then what else? Then what else is? Then what else is true? That I was outside, but Jimmy and I could see each other, so it has to be a screen door. And so what's the weather like? It has to be unseasonably warm, you know, like. If it's this time of year, it doesn't need to be this time of year, but there are certain things. As soon as one thing happens, what else needs to be true? And if you take the time, it's you can't really talk yourself to clarity. You usually have to quiet yourself to clarity, because when you try and talk yourself to the next thing you know about each other, it sounds like you're searching for that thing. If you're quiet and just let what's already happened soak in a little bit, or you just look around the room, or you look at your partner, then they're going to give you what the next thing is, or the room will give you what the next thing is. But as soon as a move's made, it's almost like dominoes just start falling, because now these other things have to be true, if that makes any sense.
I think also, too, that you use the environment. And I think today, you know, as long as I've been around, environment seems to be less and less. Like, so you were making great discoveries in the environment. Too much soda, the turntable with no records, all that kind of stuff. And I think today students place less importance on the environment. Do you think that's true?
I don't know. I don't know if that's necessarily a bad thing. Mm-hmm. I think going to the environment first is not necessarily helpful.
Mm-mm.
But knowing that, you know, like if you've got a good relationship going, there's nothing bad about bringing the world that you're in into that. So I don't know. I guess I prefer when I watch people to make sure they have something going on here before they start looking any other place than where their partner is.
Is your theory almost like go to the relationship and then everything else will unfold?
Yeah, I imagine. Like, they talk about who, what, where, mm-hmm. who, what, where. Like, give me who, give me a little more who. Start to solidify your who some more. Give me some more who on this.
A little more who.
Maybe we'll find out where is. I mm-hmm. don't know what a what is. Mm-hmm. I still don't know what the what is. So, like, so, okay, so now you're there. Fine. Now let's get back to who and who and who and who and who.
But in our scene, it was really more of a connection, you know, more of an emotional kind of connection that we were basing it off mm-hmm. of versus, oh, you're a friend. We've been friends for high school. We kind of discovered that as we went.
Well, yeah, but that, I mean, that's how it happens, isn't mm-hmm. it? Like, you already know who you are to each other, so you never say, like, remember how we're friends from high school? You know, like, you're already, and who's not a title? We use titles, you know, like, you know, when you teach, like, well, let's work on, you know, like, let's make sure you have that relationship solid. Son, dad, like, whoo, thank God we got that relationship done, you know,
right.
Like, the title does not suffice for the nature of what the who is. Mm-hmm. It's how those two people are in that moment, in that time, with each other. How do they behave with each other at that moment? And fathers and sons behave like colonels and sergeants, and fathers and sons behave like best friends, and fathers and sons behave like sons and fathers reversed, you know. So the title does not suffice. And I think the scene we did, Jimmy, was just okay.
Okay.
I think it had moments and had some stuff. I personally felt a little fearful in it, and probably went out to the environment a little bit because I wasn't sure how to make what we had with each other more solid. And so I went outside. I think it was okay. But I know that if we spent the next 5-10 years working on it, we'd get to points where we thought we had really good ones.
What would you like to see to improve it?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
Will you know tonight, before you go to bed? Will this be playing in your head?
No, I'm going to let it go.
Okay. I'll obsess about it, and I'll call you tomorrow.
Sounds good.
What have you learned playing with Dave Pasquese the last 10 years?
That it's not okay to take a day off. Like, you don't take a show off. If as long as everyone's going to be there, you may as well try your best to make it awesome. And that's what you're shooting for, is to have it be great. As Dave says, I don't know if he said this last week, that you shoot for a goal, you're always going to come up short. But if you shoot for it to be great, you might hit funny or interesting or curious or something along the way. If you shoot for it to be funny and you come up short, you only hit shitty, really shitty, awful, you know, uninteresting. And so there's no reason that we can't do just a couple of the things that we say improv is about, is to listen, to be honest and react honestly, to pay attention. Those things, and I know when I was first starting to improvise, I used to think like, well, who knows how this scene's going to go? Like, we'll just go see. Like, that almost like that it wasn't under our control to give ourselves the best possible chance to have it go well. But knowing that you can flip a switch that says, personally, that I'm going to pay attention, I'm going to listen, and I'm going to be honest and react honestly, it usually leads to at least a pretty good scene. And now that floor is there, then you can find out how good it can be.
Are you ever concerned about the laughs? Or
no,
ever? I'm not getting enough laughs.
I can't say. Oh, I've never thought that.
Okay, I do all the time.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I know times where the show felt really, really good. It was dead quiet, but it was dead quiet. It was as quiet as it is when everybody laughs. It was everybody not doing anything. No movement of chairs, no one grabbing a drink, nobody like coughing. There wasn't a clearing of the throat. It was silent. And that felt as good as everyone laughing felt. So I don't feel like I'm not getting enough laughs, because sometimes you're doing a really good job and no one's laughing at all. And that felt pretty all right.
Now, you've done a ton of Sonic commercials.
Used to.
Do you have any of the Sonic money left?
Some of it.
Okay.
Well, yeah. I bought a condo with it.
Okay.
So I live.
Because I was always jealous. I'm like, he's making tons of money every year on the Sonic stuff.
Yeah. Look at him. Jimmy, look at me.
Yeah.
You think you get these haircuts for nothing?
What is the thing you're most proud of at this point in your career?
That I would say that 98% of the people I've been in contact with would have said that that's a decent guy.
Well, I definitely think you're a decent. I think you're more than a decent guy.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you so much, TJ Jagodowski.
Well, there you have it, another Improv Nerd podcast. And I just want to thank TJ. I've known TJ for a while now, and I just really think that he, in that interview, really went really deep. He went really personal, and he was a guy that I didn't know what to expect, and it was really, really refreshing. So it was really nice, and I just again want to thank him, because it was a great interview. If you're ever in Chicago and you get a chance to see this show, TJ and Dave is just... It's totally worth checking out. It's Wednesday nights at 11 p.m. at I.O. or in New York at the Barrow Street Theater. I want to thank my producer, Ben Caprero, the good people here at Stage 773 before we take off. And if you want to know more about Improv Nerd or the classes I teach, the Art of Slow Comedy, go to jimmycurain.com. And, of course, like us on Facebook. All you have to do is go to Improv Nerd and hit the like button. I've even given you the instructions on how to do it, because I'm a total control freak. Until next time, remember, walk, don't run.
Let's say Seinfeld was on an island, yeah, and he was blowing Boris Karloff. What would that be like?
It might go something like this. Oh, Mr. Karloff, I loved you in Frankenstein, and I love giving you a blowjob. Why, Mr. Seinfeld, I love having you fuck.